anybody who was in service and took the opportunity to read. It says somewhere in our literature that my only hope is living the example of those who faced their dilemma and found a way out. When I first was making my meetings, the only reason I was coming to meetings was to get my drug dealer's paper signed, and I was coming high, and I didn't want nobody touching me. And this young lady I'm about to introduce walked up to me and force hugged me. and it was like, hey, this is what I got to learn how to do. That was somebody showing me that they could love me until I learned to love myself. Bonnie!
My name is Bonnie and I'm an addict. So I'm here to introduce our next speaker. And what Brian was talking about is that unconditional love that we have in Narcotics Anonymous, regardless of where we come from, what we have, what we don't have, who your connections are, all those things that we talk about in the readings, the 100 readings that we read at the beginning of every meeting. This is an example of that. I learned unconditional love from my sponsor, Cindy Moore. I learned that we have to do things that are uncomfortable and we have to hug people even when they don't want to be hugged. I learned that love has to be unconditional. That means that it's not about what you bring to me. It's about I have to love you, regardless. And so this woman that I'm introducing today, when we read that the newcomer is the most important person, I've learned that from her. Is that it doesn't matter who walks through that door. She's going to fucking hug you whether you want it or not. I have never been around anyone in my entire life that has loved a newcomer the way that Cindy Moore loves newcomers.
Yeah.
Anybody is welcome at her home.
That's right.
She's lived with many of them.
That's right.
She has sponsored many of them. And regardless of where they are, she's going to continue to love and hug.
That's right.
So, without further ado, Cindy Moore. Wow. I'm Cindy. I'm an addict. And grateful, that's a feeling. That feeling I have. But today I'm walking in gratitude, which is an action word, you know. And so I feel grateful, but I'm living in gratitude. And it's only because of you all. Can we just take a minute? Because I'm a little nervous and I'd like to let God have some of this. All right, so I came here, they used to call it through the back door, but this is my story. I'm gonna just lay it out like it is. So I thought everybody else was the problem. Like, it was my dad, it was my ex-husband, it was my boyfriend. I didn't have a problem, you know. It was all them. And because of that, I had a boyfriend who was going to something called NA. I don't know what the fuck that is, but whatever. And there was this little meeting across from NA called Narnon, and I started going there because I had to figure out how to live with these addicts in my life. And so I spent a couple of years doing Narnon and Al-Anon, and I'm just going to say, if you sponsor people, or you have family and loved ones, and you're getting sick around their disease, there are meetings that can help you, you know. And it really helps to have some of that when you're sponsoring people, too. So if you're having a hard time with the sponsee, hit one of those meetings. Like, it'll teach you to focus on yourself and not on all their shit. I started working the fourth step, and the fourth step in those meetings, you know how our step working guide
how thick our whole step working guidebook is. So in that meeting, that's how thick the fourth step is. So I completed it all, and like this idea is coming into the back of my head, like, oh shit, it might be me. Damn it. It might be the drugs. Oh my God. You know, and I was living in this reality. You know how we make up these stories in our heads about ourselves that wasn't true, that all I did was marijuana, and God made marijuana, and it was natural, and getting there, it wasn't when I first got here, not at all, so that couldn't possibly be a problem, even though every year I was having a car wreck and my car was held together with duct tape. But that's not a problem. It's not a problem. And I'm serious. Like, insurance companies were canceling my ass. Like, they'd give me, here's some money, go get another car, but don't come back to us. You know? So I ended up attending a meeting. And I didn't know about all these people up in this meeting. Like, I don't know. Like, they're weird. Like, they're, wow. So, but they did these readings at the beginning. These readings. Who is an addict? Most of us don't have to think twice about this. We know our whole life is centered around using. Drugs controlled me every waking minute. And once, so there I'm thinking about that. And then I go to this camp out. It was the last regional camp out that they had, and it was up at Greer's Ferry. And Pat, once again, like, here's Pat again in my life. He does the programming. And I'm like, camp out? Like, do I have to go and not get high? So I smoked a joint on the way up there, and then I transferred cars, you know, and I left the pot in my car, and I went up there, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do a whole weekend, but okay, I'm gonna try this. And every damn speaker talked about pot. What? Oh my God. You know, oh Lordy. So I went down and I sat by the lakeside and I thought about this a little more. Damn it, you know. So it says here, find a new way to live. Like, I had tried everything to try to get my life back on track. You know, I used to be a heavy, heavy drug user. I was like, let's experiment. What does this one do? Let's try it, you know. We'll find out. I was all about it. I'd try anything. What do you have and what have I got to do to get it? You know, but I thought I had gotten better because I was just smoking pot. Now, for 10 years, you know, I'm better now. But I wasn't better. My soul was still dying. And I kept trying to pull my life together, and it was just falling apart. And I picked myself up and try again. And, you know, I got clean at 50 years old. And I thought, like, my world is done, my life is done, but maybe I can just for a little while find a new way to live. That attracted me. When you all talked about finding a new way to live, I was like, God, you know, 34 years I've been running around in this cycle. Maybe there is a different way to live. And you gave me hope that if I could just, like, show up, I might figure out a new way to live. You know, it took years of step work. probably 4 years before I could come off that false narrative I had in my head that it was just pot, because it wasn't just pot. Like, it was alcohol. I was staying out in bars till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and it was cocaine. Like, you know, I knew a dude, like, all I'd do is show up and he'd be rolling that line out there giving me cocaine for free, you know. But in my head, I had created this thing to make it seem better that it was just pot. But really, it was about the disease of addiction.
Yeah.
It had had me since I was 15 years old, and it hadn't let loose of me. Probably the hardest thing, and I know we're not supposed to get specific, but this is my story, so fuck y'all. Sorry, this is being recorded. I need to calm down. I had a hard time letting loose of that idea that acid might be different, because it's not addictive. You go on a spiritual journey with it. Does that mean I have to give that up too, or is that outside the? Through step work, I realize I have had more than my fair share of everything. More than my fair share. You know, I took everything to the extreme. And if you know me, you know I still have a tendency to do that. Like, I'm kind of a full tilt mama. But thank God that today I'm full tilt in recovery. You know, my feet are solidly planted in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And looking around this room, I'm just going to tell you that they've saved my life. They saved my life when I walked in, and they've continued to save my life. So they said, get a sponsor and work the steps. So I'm just, it says in the book, recovery is in the meetings, page 15, you know. And we wanna go, oh, you gotta work the steps and all this. I wouldn't have known jack shit about steps, sponsor, spiritual principles. I wouldn't even have known about this basic text if it hadn't been for me showing up in the meeting and hearing you talk about how recovery is working in your life. So that gave me the opportunity to begin to learn what is recovery. You know, I found it in the meetings. And I eventually began to get to know the people. So originally, like, my higher power and everything was all around the literature. Like, I didn't know about y'all. You were like crazy happy, but in the book, it was describing me. It was describing me to a T, and I knew that if there was a solution, if there was any way I was going to find a different way to live, that it was going to be here. And I'm so grateful that for once in my life I didn't rebel, because I'm a rebel. I grew up in the 60s, y'all, like civil rights, black power, peace, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know. That's when I grew up. That's where I wanted to be when I was a kid. There's a dark underbelly, you know, in that. And for once, I didn't rebel, and I believed you. I don't know why I believed you, but I'm so thankful that somehow my mind was open just for a little bit, and I believed you when you told me that I could find a different way to live, and that I would lose the obsession to use drugs. So I kept coming back. My clean date is 2/27/07. So I just picked up 15 years. And I'm still a meeting maker, you guys. So when I say I believe that you said I could find a new way to live, like, I was also listening to you share in the meetings, and I believed you when you said meeting makers make it. And, you know, this is people with 10, 15, 20 years saying I still come into meetings. And I knew how my disease is. I forget. I don't know about you guys. Give me 2 weeks without a meeting, I start to forget, you know, that one is too many and 1,000 is never enough.
Never.
I forget that. I need to have my feet in the meeting so you can remind me that that addiction is still living inside my head, talking to me in my voice, trying to put me in situations where I'm going to feel disconnected and alone, and then I'm in that corner, and that thought of, well, one beer wouldn't matter, would it? You know, it's just a beer. It's not rum and coke, it's a beer. You know? And that's where my head will start with me, you know, minimizing that. No, Cindy, this is exactly, your disease is lying to you already, and it's going to tell you every other lie it needs to try to get you to pick up. So, I don't know, I could tell you that, that I try to live the steps. I don't like calling it step work. I don't know about you guys, but when I say step work, there's that word work behind it. Like, it's the steps. I do the steps. I live the steps. It is not step work that I set aside and try to get away from. I may not be writing the steps, but I'm still participating in my recovery. I'm living the steps. And for me, that's what it's all about. That's the only way I can find a new way to live. Because the way I was living was about me. It wasn't about everybody else. It was about me, what goes on inside my head, how I twist things around. Later in my recovery, really at about 10 years, I would begin taking on year-long projects with my sponsor, you know, like acceptance. What does that mean? What is acceptance really? Acceptance means like I step out of judgment. I quit judging myself and I quit judging others. And I allow myself to be in the moment, and I allow your truth to be your truth. Like, I don't have to change your mind. It's your truth. And my truth to be my truth that I can stand in and be proud of. And it took me a whole year of practicing acceptance, because it's not natural for me. It's not natural. I had to practice it. The next year I started working on letting God have my life, because I'm in acceptance, right? I've been practicing acceptance. There's got to be some God in there. So what I was discovering was, like, I'd say my morning meditation. I usually pray when I'm driving. Thank God for all of you. I'm praying while I'm driving because I kind of like the gas pedal. There is a brake pedal, you all. But then I would, like, close up my prayer, you know, and go to work and get into work, and it's just, man, it's jamming, it's rolling, it's getting complicated, and I'm not living principles. I'm at work, and you know, there's workplace gossip, there's workplace personalities, and then at the end of the day, I'd be looking back on my day and going, there wasn't a whole lot of God in any of that I did today, you know. So I began practicing not closing my prayer, but practicing carrying God with me through the day. Like, all day long, we're going to team up. He's my team, or she, or cosmic energy, whatever. That's my team, right? And I'm going to practice walking through the whole day. Walking through the whole day. And sometimes the day would get crazy and I'd forget, you know, and then I'd pick it up the next day and I'd start again. Okay, we're going to try this again. Let's walk through the whole day together. And eventually, it became natural for, like, God walks with me through the day. I mean, it's just happened, and it stayed. And so now, it's not my journey. Like this is God's journey for me. And what a whole different perspective around that I could find. That no matter where I'm at in my day, good or bad or indifferent, God has me right where I'm supposed to be. And sometimes there's a damn it behind that. But God has me right where I'm supposed to be. I have control issues. Like, and so my next big thing to work on, I was going to take a whole year and work on these control issues, and with that I discovered that for me the opposite of that control thing was to work on unconditional love. And so Narcotics Anonymous is a bunch of fully sick people who are trying to get better. But the spirit of NA, the spirit of NA is unconditional love. I don't think any human can ever achieve that. However, I can practice that. So, this was last year, you know, I'm really working hard on that unconditional love. And sometimes there's a damn it behind that too. That means that I have to step out of personalities and allow people to have their truth and me to have my truth and to love them anyway. That doesn't mean that I don't use discernment. You know, there are some people I'm closer to than others. I have my network of people, really awesome women in my life. Some awesome men in my life. I mean, women stick with women. Let me tell you, though, there have been some men who've gotten me through some really, really tough times in my recovery. So, yeah, I stick with the women. But my brothers, like, thank you. You know, this is a powerful, powerful program. And I'm never alone again. You all, when we say never alone, we were talking about this earlier. We say that, right? And we say never alone. Never again. Never again. Right? Do we really mean that? I mean, if you mean that when you say that, there's some work involved in that. Yeah. Like you've got to put yourself out there, do some work, answer the telephone, maybe show up at someone's house. Oh, and yeah, text them back. I hate to text, you know, and I'll call them. They've texted me, and I'll call them. They won't answer, but they'll text me back. And I'm like, oh, all right, I'm texting you. It takes me forever to text, but I am texting you. You know, would you just please call me?
With one finger.
Yeah. So that's where I was in 2021, is walking in that unconditional love. The NA principle, like Jimmy Kay, Like, he was all about that unconditional love. Like, he was handing out literature. He didn't make you fucking put down 12 bucks. If you needed a book, he gave you a book. You know, and I know we have to keep the organization alive. I get that. I believe in NA and all of that. But when it comes down to it, like, we've got to help our fellow addicts. Their lives are on the line. And if they need a book, find a way to get them a book. You know, I'm just, like, that literature has saved my life. That's what was the first attraction for me in here, were those readings. So, since we're talking about the literature, and I wanted to open the next portion of my story, because my story, it's like, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, you guys, but this is my story today, and so we're just going to do it. My favorite chapter is More Will Be Revealed, because like I was really scared of the uncertainty when I first got here. Like I knew what was going to happen if I used. I knew how all that was going to play out, but you're like telling me more will be revealed. Like, what is that? You know? Can we have a little more certainty here, please? But there isn't. Because more will be revealed. We never know what opportunity God has for us around the next corner. We never know how he's going to show up in our lives just at the moment we need him. And so that's recovery. More will be revealed. Just have some faith. Okay. So this is how more will be revealed. We come to know ourselves for the first time. And that's that self-exploration we do through the step work. We start to get to know ourselves, who we truly are, not the false narrative that we have made up in our heads. And sometimes my false narrative was negative, you know, and it gets me to, pulls me back into, hey, you're okay just as you are. We experience new sensations, to love, to be loved, to know that people care about us, and to have concern and compassion for others. We find ourselves doing and enjoying things that we never thought we would be doing. I jumped off a cliff at Ten Killer. Like, I don't know. I've never done that before. We make mistakes, and we accept and learn from them. We experience failure, and we learn how to succeed. Often we have to face some type of crisis during our recovery, such as the death of a loved one, financial difficulties, or divorce. These are realities of life, and they don't go away just because we get clean. Some of us, even after years of recovery, found ourselves jobless, homeless, or penniless. We entertained the thought that staying clean was not paying off, and the old thinking stirred up self-pity, resentment, and anger. No matter how painful life's tragedies can be for us, one thing is clear: we must not use, no matter what.
That's
right. So, this is hard for me to talk about, but my family, you guys, you've been with me on this whole walk. Like, when we say never alone, what I discovered is I am never alone. All I have to do is pick up the phone and reach out. So my oldest daughter, we drug her through addiction with us. We drug her through it. And she learned a lot of things from me about accepting behavior from a man that probably was very toxic. And she was in a relationship. She'd been with him for 18 years. And we had and had three children with him. And he was all right. I mean, he had his moments. I didn't really like the way he talked to her. She loved him. She loved him with all her heart. And he loved her. And so there it is, right? I mean, we have to let our children have their own journeys. So, and I loved him too. 18 years he was in our lives. You know, he was the father of my grandchildren. And he was one of us, but he mainly would just drink and smoke pot, you know. And sometimes he'd drink too much. He was really, really close to my son. So there's family. He's family, all right? These dysfunctional family we have. His mother died in January of 2021, and he started using really heavy. He started, first it was just weekends, taking meth, and then it was all the time on the meth. Man, I don't know. It's not the speed I took back in the day. Like this meth that's out here now has fentanyl in it and PCP. And he, by May, he was out of his mind. He had lost complete. He was totally psychotic. Like he was. So she had to ask him to leave. And he's just running around on the streets, like running around barefoot. He had a truck, but it ran out of gas. One time he even left it on the Garrison Avenue Bridge. He ran out of gas. He just leaves it. I mean, it was just that insanity where addiction can take us. And I tried to get him help. He knew I would try to get him help, but he would only have moments, short moments of wanting help, you know, and then the next batch would come through and he'd be off again. Let me tell you, the beds are full. The beds are full in the treatment center. And if you want to get someone help, like tonight, like they're probably gonna tell you maybe next week, maybe in 2 weeks, what's your insurance? Well, I don't know, it might be next month because you don't have the right insurance. You know, it's hard to get a bed. It's a huge problem, and there are a lot of people just begging to get a bed in a treatment center or in a detox center. And so we weren't able to get him a bed when he was wanting help. After that, he just spun out, and it just got worse and worse. And he's, you know, busting into the house. He's getting violent around the house. When he'd come over, he'd talk his kids into letting him in, even though we had an order of protection and all that shit. But she still loved him, you know, so she'd do an order of protection, but then she'd be like, I want you to come home, you need a bath, you need a good meal, come back, I'll feed you. So it was just pushing him away and wanting that old person she used to know, but he wasn't that person anymore. He had totally lost his mind. And there'd be moments, but overall, he was just very, very sick in his addiction. So at one point, her dad was like, all right, I'm done with this. He's come in one too many times. He moves in with her with his gun. He's like, I'm shooting to kill. He comes in here, he's dying, you know. So that worked for a couple of months. Well, she gets COVID. The kids get COVID. Then they get better. He gets COVID. He gets COVID really bad. He goes into the hospital. He dies. And that was on September 15th. So this is my ex-husband. I'd been married to him for 30 years. We've been divorced for 15. And we'd become really good friends. Like, that's a really cool thing when you can... We share 4 children. We're really good friends. And that's the program at work. So their dad dies. And of course, he'd canceled his insurance policy. So me and the kids were dealing with all this. And Julie, my oldest daughter, was feeling really guilty because he'd come over there to save her, got COVID from her, and now he's dead. So she's just torn up. 1 month later, she lets him back in within a week after her father's gone. She lets him back into the house. And he come and go. And he beat her up real bad 1 weekend. And she, you know, she was thinking about pressing charges, but she didn't want it. Like, he's going to go to jail for a really long time if she if she files again. So she just loved him so much. She didn't want to do, she wanted to give him another chance. Anyway, on the morning of Sunday morning, October 17th, I hear this banging at my front door. Just bang, 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 bang. Wouldn't stop. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And I'd been at Cove Lake the night before. And that had been a real spiritual good time. So I crawl out of bed and go answer the door. And it's Julie's neighbor. And he says, come quick, you gotta get over there. He's killed them all. And I'm like, what? So I get my son up and we go over there, and it's not good. It's not good. He had stabbed her in the house multiple times with the bayonet that she'd inherited from her dad. Then he'd gone, apparently my 15-year-old grandson woke up and went in there and he stabbed him. And my grandson, he ran out of the house and was screaming for help. And the cops were called, you know, the cops were being called. I'm sorry, this is hard.
Love you.
So anyway, he chased after him and he ends up catching him, stabbing him some more, and then taking a brick and beating his head in. This is his 15-year-old son. The cops show up and they stop him. He's like, I'm so sorry we couldn't get there sooner. And the cop, you know, has him come away, lay down on the ground. Well, he still had this bayonet with him, and he's going down for the cop, and then he raises back up and he stabs the cop in the throat. And at that point, the cop, he shoots him and he kills him, you know. So I get over to the house. All this has gone down. They're closing the door so I can't see in the house where my daughter is. And I'm like, so You know, I discovered my grandson. There's two more grandbabies. Where are the other grandbabies? Because that dude had said that he's killed them all. Where are the other grandchildren? And he's like, well, the five-year-old, he's in my car. And I was like, I want to see him. He's asleep right now, and you'll just have to wait, you know. And so then where's my granddaughter? Like, and we didn't see her car there. She's 17. Did she get in the car and leave? Where is she? You know, and so they're putting a bolo out, trying to find her. And, I'm like, you're sure she's not in the house somewhere? And so she wasn't in the house. We don't know where she is. And finally, I remember, I'm so old school, you guys. Hey! She has a cell phone. Maybe I should call her. So I call her, and she answers. And she had been spending the night with a friend four blocks away. So she was safe. And we get her, and then we get the little boy. And my youngest daughter, who's 26, bless her heart, took the kids with her, and she's now their guardian. So that happened at 6 o'clock in the morning. I get home about 7:30. Like, I don't even know how people find this stuff out. Crazy internet, probably. At 8:15, there was a member of Narcotics Anonymous banging on my door with four packs of cigarettes. Here, I know you're gonna need these, you know? And then it started, like, N-A, oh my gosh, never alone. My family, my people in recovery showed up. Like, they're bringing us food, they're setting up a meal train. Like, my sponsor, she helps me go through the photographs so I can figure out what's gonna be on the video memory thing. I'm trying to do this, I'm having to bury two people, you know, and there's no insurance, and oh my God, what are we going to do? And like the family just shows up. They're putting on a spaghetti dinner. Oh my God. And then where my daughter works. So my daughter had this huge, huge heart. Like, she did learn some good stuff from me, right? And people she worked with, they fucking loved her. And they're stepping up, and they're helping. And they're doing GoFundMe stuff. And then her teenage clan is all jumping in. And I'm like, wow. Like, it was overwhelming. I didn't even know. People are saying, what can I do to help? And I said, I do not know. You know, thank you, but I don't know. I don't know what you can do to help, you know. Bring me more cigarettes. and monsters. But anyway, because I've got a lot to do. So at one point during this, so her brother was really, really, really close to his sister. That was his best friend. And he's just devastated. Just devastated. And his brother-in-law, I mean, they weren't married, but 18 years, brother-in-law, he was really close to him, but he kind of broken away because he was so out there. But still, he was really close to them, and he's just devastated, like falling to pieces. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't fall to pieces here, you know, and I'm just like zombie walking through the day. And he brings home a case of beer and sets it on the counter, and I'm in the refrigerator, and there's a case of beer, you know, and I know he has pot too. I know he has pot, but there's a case of beer, and I'm like, no, Cindy, no. But my hand, it's like going over there and it's grabbing that beer. Like, I felt that cold can, and I went, whoa, What? Like, who told you to do that? You know, don't get high, Cindy. Don't get high no matter fucking what. Don't get high. You've got your people here. Call them if you need them. Don't get high. Well, you know, I could probably call a doctor. You know, and in a situation like this, I bet he would prescribe me a Valium. Yeah. You know, don't get high, Cindy. Don't get high. You can do this. You can do this. Don't get high. So, it was really hard, but I didn't have to do it alone, and I didn't have to get high. And you know, when we do our reservations in step one, you know, I can remember thinking, I don't really know. You know, it asks you, do you have reservations, you know? And I did have reservations when my sponsor told me to take my bong and tray and drop it off the Garrison Bridge. I'm like, what? What? Not my bong. But I did it, you know? But then those other reservations, I just don't know. I don't know. You know, death. I don't know. I don't know. So today I know that I can walk through death. Death of a former spouse. Death of my child. Death of my grandchild. And I'm never alone, and I don't have to get high no matter what.
That's right.
You know, and wow. So it's you all who give me the strength, to get through those moments that I never thought I could get through clean. I know that that I'm still suffering. Like something like that doesn't go away. It carries on and it pops up and so when we say in the rooms, let's take a moment of silence for the still suffering addict, it's not just those addicts who are out there using. Sometimes those suffering addicts are standing in the room with us.
That's right.
Suffering.
That's right.
You know, and I'm telling you, when you're suffering, speak to someone. Speak to someone. You don't have to tell the whole group or tell the whole group. Let me tell you, I was in there blurting at my home group. Those poor people, I felt like when they saw me walk in, they were like, oh, more of this. You know, but really they didn't think that. That was me. Yeah. That was my disease trying to keep me from going to the meeting and sharing about stuff so I could stay clean. You know, sharing about those feelings. So I'm grateful today. Two of my grandchildren are alive, and I thought they were all dead. You know, I'm grateful today that I don't, unfortunately, but I don't have to go through a trial. I didn't have to go through a manhunt. I mean, this whole scenario is awful, but I have things I can be grateful for today. I'm grateful for the people in the rooms who stood by me, locked arms with me, walked me through it. And let me tell you, I wasn't always nice through this. Like, after about 80 hugs, I was like, and people saying, are you okay? You okay? And I'd be like, yes, I'm okay. And then finally I'm like, well, hell no, I'm not okay. You know? It's like, I'm not okay. You know, but I'm here. I'm here. I'm in the rooms, and I'm living the steps. I'm living the steps. So I'd also, since there was a thing on sponsorship earlier this day, I would like to talk about sponsorship a little bit. So I know I want to talk about it, but I'm not sure what the words are. Tell me, God. Okay, so when I came here, people were saying, get a sponsor. And I'm looking around the rooms, and there were several people that could have been my sponsor. And I didn't know. I don't know, you know. It's all I can do to just not pick up. So, but I kept hearing this one woman's name in my head. And it was probably my first prayer in Narcotics Anonymous was, they say I've got to get a sponsor, and apparently it's crucial to my recovery. I need to get a sponsor. And I kept hearing Bert's name in my head. So I asked her to be a sponsor. And listen, now, I wish I could do what she does on this, because I'm too wishy-washy on it. She said, listen, Cindy, I have a lot of sponsees, and if you really want to do this, like, I'm willing to be your sponsor, but I really don't want to spend time putting all my energy into something that you don't really want and you're not willing to put some work into. She says, so I want you to call me, and this is before texting, call me every day for 30 days. I was like, okay. So I called her every day for 30 days. And at that point, we began our sponsorship relationship. And you know, I can call her, and she knows by the tone of my voice, because we didn't have texting. I had to call her, you know. And she knows where I'm at, and I know where she's at, because we can tell just by the tone of our voices. She's still my sponsor today. She's been my sponsor for 15 years. And that journey has not always been good, because I want to rebel. I'm still a rebel, you know? And here's someone making very strong suggestions, and I'm like, oh, fuck that shit. And then she'll say, and how'd that work out for you? You know? All right, I'm willing now, you know, because that did not work out very well. And we've had times where we don't see eye to eye. Also, my sponsor is human, and I love her, but my sponsor is human, and she makes mistakes, and that's hard sometimes when your sponsor makes mistakes, because you want to, like, have your sponsor as the goddess, right? But she's a human, and so I had to pray, and still God, you know, like, he walks with me every day now, and he's not telling me to change. He's saying, stick with it, Cindy. So I stick with my sponsor. And through that, I got to see what it's like to make a terrible mistake in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, make amends, and continue to show up. You know, no matter what anybody is saying about you or thinking about you, that's hard, because we want people to like us. Hell yes, we all want people to like us, you know. And she felt like everyone hated her. And I would say, it's only three people. Only three people in NA hate you, you know. The rest of us love you, you know. And those three, fuck them. You know. So she did it. She walked through it. She stayed clean. She didn't get high. She made amends. She continues to be of service. And let me tell you, when all that went down in my family, this woman was my rock. Like, she didn't just show up for me. Like, she did the work. She put together a spaghetti dinner. She helped me go through photographs. She was there anytime, day or night, that I called her. She still is. And, like, that's what it's all about. And I can only hope that I can become a sponsor like that, too. Because she was there for me. She made sure I got through it. She made sure my whole family got through it. They could not believe when they came to the spaghetti dinner. They were astounded at the number of people that were there. Why were they there? Because I have kept showing up. Like, you can disconnect yourself, and when you need help, a few of us who remember you will show up. But if you continue to show up in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, go to various meetings, be part of, show some unconditional love, show some forgiveness, show some hope. Like, when you need help, you will be amazed at the number of people that will show up at your door and help you. And I am just like blown away. Blown away. So I know I'm running out of time. I would like to read this last section. And I don't read just sentences. Sorry, you guys. Like, I don't analyze the literature. I feel the literature. And to feel the literature for me, like, I've got to read more than one sentence. You read one sentence and I'm like, read the rest of the paragraph. Don't ask what that word is. If you read the rest of the paragraph, it tells you. Just read the rest of the paragraph. So, anyway, we grow through pain in recovery and often find that such a crisis is a gift, an opportunity to experience growth by living clean. This gift may be finding strength within ourselves or regaining the feeling of self-respect that we lost. Spiritual growth, love, and compassion are idle potentials until shared with a fellow addict. By giving unconditional love in the fellowship, we become more loving, and by sharing spiritual growth, we become more spiritual. I love you all so much. Thank you for being a part of my life.